time for a Gaza Corner at KALW, San Francisco, 91.7, exactly 11 o'clock. We'll have some interesting Afghani jazz by an American who spent time in Afghanistan after we discuss Gaza Corner. One of the articles at the Tangents homepage is a New York Times article that came out on March 1st. The Times kind of put an article out that pats itself on the back. And it was written by the Kabul, Afghanistan bureau chief, Rod Norland. The article, and I quote, says, "It offers a glimpse of the Times' strategy of investing in whatever it takes to cover the news properly, even as our competitors downsize." The article, though, is quite interesting. And yes, it is self-serving, but it does remind readers that the New York Times is one of the few Western mainstream news organizations with a meaningful presence in Afghanistan. And it provides a behind-the-scenes look at the media coverage of the war in Afghanistan, or the lack of the coverage of the war in Afghanistan, and the reasons behind it. In 2012, the war in Afghanistan surpassed the Vietnam War as the longest in U.S. history. That was 5 years ago. Here we are in 2017. And this endless war is in its 16th year. So here we have an endless war that at the same time is a largely forgotten war. I mean, when's the last time you thought about the Afghanistan War? It's not written about hardly at all anymore. Back in December of 2014, President Obama thought he could end the war by just saying, "It's over." But that wasn't reality. 3 years later, there are still nearly 10,000 American troops in Afghanistan, several thousand NATO troops, plus a substantial American air power force in Afghanistan that you may recall bombed a Doctors Without Borders hospital. I have a photo at the Tangents homepage. And as New York Times bureau chief Rod Norland points out, the war continues, and it continues to go from bad to worse. The current situation in Afghanistan is worse than any time since it started in 2001, at least for most Afghans. The civilian toll is at a record high. The number of Afghans displaced within their own country has more than doubled since 2013, and this all happening while U.S. troops remain in the country. And Afghan military casualties are rising to a level that American commanders warn is unsustainable. Meanwhile, the Taliban is resurgent. They hold more Afghan territory now than any time since being ousted from Kabul, the capital, in 2001. Nordland is stationed in Kabul. He says foreigners have become a rare sight in the capital, and even more rare are foreign journalists. He traces the decline to a spate of deadly attacks, mostly suicide attacks, on journalists and aid workers starting in January of 2014 that chased many news operations out of the country. Nordland gives a roll call of the surviving organizations in Afghanistan. In his words, quote, "The New York Times has three foreign correspondents here. Normally there are two. Only two other organizations match even that, Reuters and AFP, the French news organization, which have two expat correspondents based there. The Wall Street Journal and the UK Guardian each have one. The Washington Post has one correspondent, and that correspondent splits his or her time between Pakistan and Afghanistan, as does the German press agency DPA. And that's about it, except for a smattering of very brave freelancers. Nordland continues, none of the television networks, none of the television networks are here anymore. The last to have an expat correspondent stationed here, the BBC, closed its English language bureau in August of 2015. NPR, National Public Radio, also closed a couple of years ago, though it has sent employees on short assignments. Last year, NPR's David Gilkey, an American, and Zabihullah Tamana, an Afghan, were killed in Helmand province on such a visit, unquote. Quoting the author of the article of the New York Times, Rod Nordland. A lack of media on the ground, though, only partially explains the scarcity of Afghan war coverage. After all, when you think about it, Western mainstream media is hardly present inside Syria, yet we hear about Syria all the time. Western mainstream media is hardly inside Yemen, yet Yemen is covered more prominently than Afghanistan. The biggest reason I can figure out is fatigue. Americans just don't care about Afghanistan anymore. It's old news. It's since 2001. You know how many mentions Afghanistan got in Trump's and Hillary's convention speeches, which were an hour or more? How about zero and zero? An ongoing 16-year American war doesn't even merit a friggin' mention by either of the, at that time, presidential candidates. We invaded in 2001 after 9/11, relatively quickly expelled the Taliban from Kabul, forced Osama bin Laden to hide in the mountains, and then have gotten hopelessly bogged down in so-called nation building. 16 years later, the Kabul government stands little chance of surviving on its own. Transparency International ranks Afghanistan 166th out of 168 in corruption. It's one growth industry. Any guesses? It's pretty easy. It's one growth industry is opium, as Afghanistan supplies about 90% of the world's heroin. And although driven from Kabul, the Taliban may be stronger than ever as it controls more territory than at any time since 2001 and enjoys sanctuary in Pakistan. And the U.S.-Afghan presence has not even deterred the Islamic State from establishing a local Afghan franchise. I saw an L.A. Times op-ed by Andrew Basevich last year. To quote him, he says, however inconvenient, Afghanistan demands attention. And this article is also linked at the tangents.com homepage. For here, the United States first set out to test the proposition that has formed the cornerstone of our national security policy since 9/11, that the deft application of U.S. military power can not only eliminate those threatening to do us harm, but also install in their place a stable political order conducive to liberal values, unquote. Really, America's policy has caused the direct opposite on both counts. Our military intervention increases anti-Americanism. So many civilians are killed, which results in more recruits for the Taliban, for the Islamic State, for Al-Qaeda. Can you think of one time the U.S. intervened in the Middle East and a, quote, stable political order conducive to liberal values emerged, unquote? The next time would be the first time. The U.S. is adept at destroying countries and producing failed states. And we do so spending ungodly amounts of money, a trillion. I can't even imagine how much money that is, $1 trillion in Afghanistan alone. And the U.S. never learns from history. We just continue. Now Trump has doubled down on the budget in terms of significantly increasing the military budget while cutting most everything else. Everything comes to an end at some point, even endless wars. But my fear is that the war in Afghanistan keeps grinding on as it is not even on anyone's radar anymore. The music for tonight is courtesy of Larry Porter, and I may play some other Afghani artists as well, we'll see. Larry is a pianist and also a rabab player. The rabab is the national instrument of Afghanistan. It's a short-necked lute with 18 strings. And he traveled through Afghanistan in 1976, which was a time you could do it. It's kind of in golden age of Afghanistan. And he studied with the renowned master Ustad Muhammad Omar in Kabul. In his words, he says, this is music composed for rabab and piano using elements of Western, Afghan, and Indian music. Larry Porter, the CD is called Silk Road Blues. Silk Road Blues. And just making sure the CD player is fed and happy. And it is. Gaza Corner on 91.7.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Happy birthday to Jan Gbarek. On the soprano saxophone, Ustad Fateh Ali Khan, not to be confused with the late Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. Fateh Ali Khan apparently is like Smith in Pakistan. And the album's called Ragas and Sagas. Jan Gbarek saw this Pakistani band perform in Norway. He was enthralled, met them. This is many years ago. And then they put out this recording on ECM back in 1992 called Ragas and Sagas, and Raga 4, again featuring Ustad Fateh Ali Khan and Jan Gbarek. The previous two pieces were Afghani pieces following Afghanistan being the subject of Gaza Corner. You can check out the links to the articles that I used to research what I was talking about at atangents.com. And then in a few days, the audio for tonight and all the articles will then transfer over to the Gaza Corner archive, which is a really rich archive of all the Gaza Corners for the last many years. And that also is at the Tangents website. We began with the American Larry Porter, who traveled to Afghanistan in 1976 and became a master of the rebab, also sometimes spelled rabab, also sometimes spelled rubab, many ways, but it is the national stringed instrument of Afghanistan. We heard the loop of love, the loop of love from Larry Porter. And that was a very interesting meshing of Afghani music and Indian music and American jazz. And it featured not just the rabab, but piano from Larry Porter as well. Also soprano sax, viola, French horn, and a violin. And then we heard from perhaps one of the, maybe the greatest practitioner of the rabab in the United States and maybe in the world. He's certainly up there. And his name is Qurashi, Q-U-R-A-I-S-H-I, Qurashi. This is from an album entitled Mountain Melodies, Rubab Music of Afghanistan. He fled Afghanistan and settled in New York City. You have to keep in mind that under the Taliban, music was not allowed. There was a systemic repression, which really to this day has taken an incalculable toll on Afghani instrumental music, even with world music flourishing in so many places. It just has been stunted in Afghanistan, and most of the really great living practitioners are living in exile. And the track that we heard was called Janana from Qurashi, and then on to the Ragas and Sagas from Jan Gbarek.